Hi, everybody. This is Lauren Baker with Search Engine Journal. Welcome to today's SEJ show, sponsored by InMotion Hosting, which is going to be a little bit different than most of our podcasts. Today, we're going to be talking with Joe O'Connor from 4-Day Week Global about the concept of the 4-Day Work Week and how it can work for your business and how it may work for SEJ, because we're part of one of your pilot programs. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
Hi, Lauren. Good to be here.
It's great to meet you. And I like to start off most of these podcasts and conversations with just a little bit about yourself so our audience can learn about you, 4-Day Week Global, and just about how this entire concept and how you got started in it from a consultancy standpoint.
Sure. So our organization, 4-Day Week Global, is a not-for-profit organization that was founded back in 2019 in New Zealand by a pair of New Zealand-based entrepreneurs, Andrew Barnes and Charlotte Lockers, who had run a trial of the 4-Day Work Week in their own company, Perpetual Guardian, in 2018, which is a company that does real estate planning, wills, and trusts in New Zealand. So not a particularly exciting company, they would admit themselves. But the idea really came from our founder, Andrew Barnes, was on a long-haul flight. He's originally from the UK. And he was reading research that suggested that people were only truly productive for roughly around 3 hours per day. And what he was asking himself was, if I change the conversation in my own business away from hours worked and how long people spend in the office, at the desk, or on the clock, and onto output, and offer people an additional day off in exchange for improved productivity, can I deliver better business performance? So they ran a trial which was based around this concept of the 180-100 rule. 100% pay, 80% time, in exchange for a commitment to delivering 100% of the output. And the trial was a huge success. You know, their productivity scores, their well-being scores, their engagement scores all shot up. The trial was analyzed by academics in Auckland University. And this really gave rise to our organization. You know, the attention and the coverage that trial received. This was back before the 4-Day Work Week was quite the global phenomenon that it is today. And since then, we've been working with companies all over the world from different industries to help them to trial or transition to this reduced hour productivity focused approach.
Very interesting. So I remember my first job when I graduated university. I had been interning for someone, and this is a long time ago. This was in 1999 or 2000. I had been interning for a year for someone that had a very small digital marketing agency. And as her digital marketing agency was growing, she brought me on full time. So she brought me on salary. And then I was thinking to myself, well, salary is 40 hours a week, more or less. What if I knocked that out in 3 days? Could I have a 4-day weekend? And I think ultimately it ended up being kind of a 4-day work week style environment, because I actually enjoyed that goal, that ability to have that extra day. And that was a driving force, like for me that whole time. And I think even now, like if I line up a vacation or something like that, like that's the drive, like let's get as much stuff done as possible so I can actually enjoy that vacation, which I guess helps the company at the end of the day. And helps everyone else, but also helps me when I'm actually off, so I'm not worrying about work. Do you find that someone being able to have an extended work-life balance and have that 3-day weekend to do whatever the hell they want to do over those 3 days is a great incentivizing force? Or like, what do you typically find when you're doing this research and working with different companies, and does it go company by company?
I think it's a huge incentivizing force, but let me circle back to another example of the kind of phenomenon that you just described that has really driven me personally in my own journey to this role over the last number of years. You know, I've given you the background of 4-Day Week Global, but I'm originally from Ireland. I'm living in New York at the moment, but I'm an Irish guy. And in my role in Ireland back in 2018, we commissioned a survey of about 5,000 public sector workers in Ireland to ask them about their attitudes towards a whole range of things around work-life balance, work time reduction, and so on. And one of the things that really, really struck me from that, we had hundreds and hundreds of comments from working parents, predominantly mothers, who talked about how they were already on 4-day work weeks or already on reduced work time, which they opted to do coming back off maternity leave for work-life balance and for childcare reasons, but they were obviously on reduced salary. And what so many of these people said was, you know, our output, our expectations, and our responsibilities are the same as they were before we took reduced work time, and they're the same as our 5-day colleagues. So what does that tell us? It tells us two things. First of all, we've got a gender equality problem in the workplace.
Yeah.
Secondly, Parkinson's law, which is this idea that the length of time that you've got available to complete a task, that a task will expand to fill the time available for its completion. And that's really something that I think drives the philosophy behind the 4-day work week movement.
Before we get too far into our interview, we want to just thank you for listening to the Search Engine Journal show. We're going to take a quick break and bring you a little word from our sponsor. Do you need to improve your website's performance? Then get the speed you deserve with InMotion Hosting. InMotion Hosting provides fast and reliable website hosting for businesses of any size, all backed by 24/7 customer support and the industry's best money-back guarantee. Trust your website to the web hosting experts at InMotionHosting.com. Again, that's InMotionHosting.com. Now back to our show. It's funny you bring that up, because one thing I have noticed is I'm a bit older. I'm getting closer to 50. I'm a father. I have a family. A lot of my friends are in the same boat. When they take a vacation, or when they have a child that's born, or when something happens, like you have a baseball game you have to get to, a lot of them feel threatened by people that aren't in that situation, that maybe they're only responsible for taking care of a puppy at home as opposed to a family. So they feel threatened by people that are going into the office 5 days a week, or by threatened by people that want to take their position. And that does happen from time to time when a company like does layoffs. Typically, sometimes the layoffs do happen for the folks that are maybe not coming in as often, or your face isn't shown as often and things like that. So, really interesting. So do you think it kind of levels the playing ground a little bit?
Right. You know, this is one of the less talked about, but it's one of the areas that we're looking at in the research we're doing on our own pilot programs, which I'm sure we'll get to, but is looking at the potential for this to have a revolutionary equalizing force when it comes to gender equality. And one of the things we are looking at is the impact that this has on the sharing of domestic, household, and caring labor in the home, which traditionally is done, you know, predominantly by women. But that if moving to a 4-day work week could effectively, you know, could equalize things in the home, but also in the workplace, you know, because traditionally women have been, you know, have been largely the people who have taken part-time work within the workplace. And could this lead to a scenario where, you know, training opportunities, leadership opportunities, you know, that there is a much more equal playing field in relation to that. But just to come back to your point on the incentive, I think that's a really key piece here, because what the 4-day work week does is it can really, you know, align company interests with employee interests in a very transformative way. You know, the offer of an extra day off and what that means to people in their lives, whether it's, you know, extra time with family, extra time in the community, you know, being able to spend more time with kids, with elderly relatives, learning a new skill, taking up a new hobby. You know, the stories that come out of companies who have managed to pull this off for their employees are incredibly, incredibly powerful. So, you know, if you think about it, the companies that then trial a 4-day work week with really, really clearly defined, tangible goals, targets, objectives to say, look, if we can maintain the following things, then we're going to make this permanent. And then they really empower their employees to come up with, what are the changes we need to make to our work practices? What are the ideas and the solutions that can enable us to deliver the same amount of output in 4 days rather than 5? And really important to say, we're not talking about the same inputs. We're talking about the same output. This is not about doing the same work in the same way in 4 days. But actually, you know, for a huge amount of companies, when they start this process, they realized that the four-day work week is already here. It's just buried under the rubble of unnecessary and overlong meetings, distractions and interruptions in the workday, you know, outdated, outmoded processes, and poor use of technology. And actually, when they enable people to, you know, to actually address these inefficiencies within the business, then they find that the four-day work week is well within reach.
You're hitting me with so many memories of the first. Okay, so my background, and this first time we've really ever talked, besides my story I was just telling you earlier about my old roommate from Cork, but the first time I've always had been like a self-employed entrepreneur running my own sites and things like that, and then, you know, at one time I tried to build a small agency. So I thought the way to go was to rent an office space, to buy a water cooler, to get desks and to have people coming in from 9 to 5 and working. And here's a couple of things that I noticed. That water cooler chatter and that talk is something that a lot of people expect to do when they go into the office. They expect to have the camaraderie amongst work. Your team is one thing when it's around the company and it's good, but sometimes I would have like people just talking about baseball scores or football all day, and I'd just be sitting there. It'd be driving me absolutely crazy. Another thing I found was that on Fridays, most of my staff would come in completely hungover because they had gone out drinking all night on Thursdays anyway, because in Tampa, Florida, apparently it's a thing to go out drinking on Thursdays and go to work hungover on Fridays. So for me, I felt like I was getting maybe 3 days out of that staff that I was expecting to be in the office and working 5 days. And then without going down a route or consulting or whatever, I tried to change things up a little bit to not have those expectations. Hey, you can come in, you want to do this, work from home, just make sure, you know, you're doing this or whatever. So I have experienced those frustrations as an employer in the past, especially it's almost like the concept of setting meetings for 30 minutes and staying on that meeting until 30 minutes is over, even if you only need 10 or 15 minutes to get through the meeting. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Like my point is I've had this frustration with trying to fit into those 5 days and expecting that 9 to 5. So it doesn't, and then with efficiencies, right? With technology, with phones, with text, with email, with everything else, don't really need that all the time, sounds like.
Yeah, well, firstly, we need to get down to Tampa, Florida to run a four-day work week initiative, I think, based on what you've just told me. Yes. Yeah, I mean, meetings is one of the first things that a lot of companies go after when they do this. You know, are we spending too long in certain meetings? Have we got standing meetings that don't need to take place or they're happening too regularly? Have we got meetings that don't have a structured enough agenda? Have we got meetings that have the entire team on it when actually it only probably needs 2 or 3 members of the team and everyone else can be updated by an email? So these are a very effective starting point in a lot of knowledge type jobs. But I mean, I think just to touch on, because as you described, this is not a new phenomenon. You know, we don't think that we've all of a sudden discovered the third secret of Fatima here. These are the kinds of frustrations around productivity, efficiency, burnout. You know, these are challenges that organizations have been grappling with for a long, long time. So what's changing? Why is this idea all of a sudden taking off, particularly in those sectors that maybe used to be predominantly office-based and now are maybe, you know, hybrid or remote first? And I think it's a few things. I think, first of all, at a leadership level, in a lot of those industries, offering flexible working or remote working used to be a competitive advantage. It's not anymore. It's now a standard expectation. So those companies that used to offer that, you know, to give themselves an edge, particularly when you're trying to compete with, you know, let's say you're a tech company and you're trying to compete with Facebook and Google for engineers, you're not going to compete in the top 1% of compensation. So we're seeing companies saying, you know what, right now, if we can pull this off without sacrificing organizational performance or priorities, we can compete in the top 1% of work weeks. The other thing that's changed, and I think it's what you just alluded to, is, you know, managers who previously managed primarily, if we're being honest, based on presenteeism, based on people's availability in the office. You know, Jim was in there at 7 o'clock yesterday morning, and he's still in here at 8 o'clock this evening. So clearly he's a trooper and he's being super productive for the company. Remote working forced a paradigm shift. You know, you could not measure and monitor performance in the same way. So a lot of managers have got much sharper at actually measuring what's getting done. And therefore, you know, the 4-day work week for a lot of companies just feels like a logical progression and a logical next step rather than something revolutionary as it might have seemed a few years ago.
Yeah, it always seemed like the first one in, last one out was that indicator of who was working the hardest and not necessarily the indicator of who was working the smartest. Maybe the smartest is working the system, but the existing system, but not necessarily the most productive at the end of the day. Now, another thing too is, you know, as you had said, you started from a project in New Zealand. You're from Ireland. You work with companies all over the globe. My impression of the United States and our HR system here is the less holidays, the better, right? I've been in office situations where people are eating lunch at their desks. They're not leaving. No one's leaving to go to lunch. They feel the pressure to work through even lunch. They feel the pressure to not be able to take off on a Monday, on a long weekend. Sometimes meetings are set up then. And then it seems like in the United States, compared based upon other countries I've lived in and people that I work with, there's less holidays that are counted every year, or they're counted as PTO, right? It's not a holiday anymore. It's PTO. It's the same as you taking a sick day. So how does it compare, and how have you found adoption rates country by country? Because when I look at like a country, maybe like the UK or Canada. So in Canada, there's basically one long weekend every month, right? There's one Monday off every month, kind of treats everyone, probably helps the alcohol industry a little bit and things like that. So how do you find the comparisons between country by country? And do you find that you're utilizing different strategies based upon where these companies are located and what the set expectations for the old guard used to be?
So, you know, where I'm from, the US, rightly or wrongly, and whether this is based on reputation or reality or a mix of both, is pretty much regarded as the capital of overwork among advanced Western economies. You know, Japan and Kuroshi and Korea are maybe in another league, but, you know, certainly when we talk about overwork culture, you know, when I talked about this kind of badge of honor for, you know, long hours and equaling, you know, and hard work equaling smart work, a lot of that was US multinationals based in Ireland, if I'm being honest. So, you know, when I moved here to New York, which is maybe seen as the capital of overwork, I definitely had people saying to me, you know, you've got an uphill struggle. But what we've discovered is, and maybe it's because it's a huge market here, and there's a degree of self-selecting bias in our programs because, you know, the companies that come to us are the companies that are already interested largely to some extent in new and progressive and flexible ways of working. We don't get too many CEOs who, you know, who never believed in any kind of flexible working, and all of a sudden they wake up one morning and they say, hey, you know what, we're going to do a 4-day work week. But we have seen, you know, we have 40 companies who started trials in the US and Canada at the beginning of April. We have another program coming up starting in October where we've had a very, very significant level of interest. That's the one that you guys are going to be participating in. And actually what we found is that in country, so within Europe, the UK has some of the longest hours and some of the lowest levels of productivity. And I think this is an interesting point around this whole debate. If you look at within Europe, the countries with the longest hours, the UK, Greece, Italy, have some of the lowest productivity. Some of the countries with the shortest hours, Denmark, Netherlands, and so on, have amongst the highest levels of productivity. and business competitiveness. So there is actually no real correlation between the two. But what we're finding is that to some extent, it is in those countries where the four-day week is almost a more revolutionary big change here and in the UK than it might be in Germany, where average work hours are, you know, already something like 35 hours a week. Denmark, the Netherlands, so these countries where they don't currently have a culture of overwork, maybe the four-day work week seems like, you know, more like just a small incremental move, whereas here it's a really big idea. It's a real paradigm shift. And I think that actually helps to fuel companies to see this as a competitive advantage, and it helps to fuel demand and interest amongst workers, particularly as we come out of the pandemic, where I think, you know, people's horizons have shifted in terms of what they believe is possible. Something they might have seen as a pie in the sky idea a few years ago all of a sudden doesn't feel that way. And also people's priorities have changed. I think for a lot of people, the pandemic has forced them to really realign how they value, you know, different things within their lives and what they think constitutes a reasonable life-work balance.
So we've tried to do no meeting Mondays and no meeting Fridays from time to time as well. I do believe that people get caught up in meetings so much that they actually can't get their work finished or done because they're in meetings. And then when you have 100 people in a meeting, you're paying 100 people to be in that meeting for an hour. So it's whatever that is times 100, right? So it can also get quite pricey to have so many meetings, but they are needed. But then there's also a flow of information that should happen. And there's more tools out there and solutions out there now than there used to be, such as Loom, which we use quite a bit at SEJ. And I'm using on the agency side too, where I can put together one video and one walkthrough and send it out to the team. And there's a little bit of accountability in Loom. You can see who's watched it and everything else, but people can watch it when they have a chance, right? As opposed to saying, hey, stop what you're doing right now. We all have to jump on this so I can walk through this in real time so you all understand. Are there any other tools or solutions that you would recommend to kind of take away from that old or maybe outdated or getting outdated stand-up meeting, which may happen three times a day, to doing something a little bit more productive that does help with that balance where people can watch on their phone or their laptop or wherever there may be?
We've worked a little bit with Yak and a few other asynchronous communication providers on delivering some of these tools. But I think that the key point that you're making, both on that and also in relation to the no meeting Monday concept, is something that we talk to a lot about companies that are moving to reduce work time or 4-day work weeks. And it's this idea about being much more deliberate about how you structure and how you design the workday and the work week. So being much more deliberate about the time you set aside for collaboration. So availability for meetings, you know, collaborating with other team members on projects, the time you set aside for administration. So when are you going to do email? When are you going to do Slack? You know, are you going to be available to that all day, every day? And therefore you're probably more busy than you are productive. Or are you going to carve out time to do that? Are you going to set aside specific time for high value work where you're not going to be disturbed and you're just going to be focused on key priority tasks that you need to get done? And then also setting aside some time for rest within the workday to make sure that you're recharged and that you're refreshed for everything else. So I think being much more clear about how you actually design the workday and the work week can go a long way to delivering the kind of efficiencies that you need in order to make this happen.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the SEJ Show, which is made possible by this little break and a word from our sponsor. Do you need to improve your website's performance? Then get the speed you deserve with InMotion Hosting. InMotion Hosting provides fast and reliable website hosting for businesses of any size, all backed by 24/7 customer support and the industry's best money-back guarantee. Trust your website to the web hosting experts at InMotionHosting.com. Again, that's InMotionHosting.com. Now back to our show. Now, for me personally, I'm probably the most productive between 5 a.m. and 8 a.m. in the morning. That's my quiet time. I like to get up early, pour a cup of coffee, sit down, do things. I'm not having my notifications go off, things like that. I have some friends that their productive times are after 9 p.m., from like 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. I know some people that are very productive during the day. I haven't gone into an office and worked for a decade. However, I will go visit clients and spend my entire day in a client office. And I find that I am incredibly exhausted by about 2 or 1 p.m. because I'm sitting there underneath these lights and in an uncomfortable chair and just going. One thing that you brought up was the rest time. So the first job I had, in addition to trying to negotiate, like knocking out all my hours within 3 days, my boss also had a nap room in the office where if we wanted to, we can go lay down for 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And it was actually amazing because I could just go in there, turn off the lights, either take a nap or just lay there and meditate or think about things for a while and then go back. And I just felt so refreshed afterwards. So I guess what I'm getting at is, how do you balance when people are naturally productive? Because all people are different. And when we try to squeeze them into that 9 to 5 or that 9 to 4, or in some cases, I know in some cases in some states in the US, they say that, you know, it's really 9 to 6 because that hour that you have off for lunch doesn't count. So like how do you balance someone's natural productivity from that standpoint?
So this might not always be possible, you know, in every role in every department where there are different requirements and needs for availability and responsiveness and so on. But I think, you know, part of the philosophy here is giving people the time, you know, enabling people to work when they're at their most productive and giving people the time back when it means the most to them in their lives. So for some people, it might not be a true 4-day work week. It might be 5 shorter days so that they can do the school runs, pick up their kids in the morning and also in the afternoon, but working the same hours. I think what you've described is, you know, there's a science behind this around night owls and larks. I mean, you're in the majority. Most people are like that, that when they get up first in the morning, it's when they're most at their most productive to do more high energy focused tasks. There are some people, as you mentioned, who are better later in the day. And it tends to be for most people, you know, this kind of time in the afternoon is when you would kind of say, okay, carve out some time to do some email, do some tasks that maybe aren't going to tax you as much because it might be. So this is partly why in our programs, when we talk about the 4-day work week, and I think it's important to define what do we mean by the 4-day work week. You know, there's a misconception out there that this means, you know, shutting the company down on a Friday or on a Monday, the office is closed. So basically moving the business to a 4-day work week. You know, some companies can get away with that. If you're an advertising agency or a marketing company where, you know, basically all of your work is deliver X project for Y client in Z timeframe, you don't have any need for rapid response availability. All the client cares about is you get the work done in time and to standard. It will probably work for you to have a universal day off and to just shut your office because it means that the members of your team are more available to each other to collaborate. But for a lot of companies, if you've got sales roles, if you've got customer service functions, if you've got retail shops, that will not work. So we're not talking about moving the business to a 4-day work week. We're talking about different shifts and different rosters. So I guess what we're saying is that the 4-day week is the headline. Really what we're talking about is reduced hour working. There's a huge amount of flexibility within that. It's not one size fits all. But from our point of view, we do not work with companies who want to work the same hours in 4 days. In other words, who want to do, you know, right now they're doing 540. They want to move to 4 10-hour days, partly because of what you've just described. Because not only is there quite a bit of research and evidence for a lot of people that that can lead to increased work intensification, stress and burnout, even though people have an additional day off. Can work for some people on an individual level, but you know, I don't think it's a slam dunk by any stretch. But actually from the company's point of view, if you think about it this way, which are likely to be more productive, the first, second, and third hour of a Friday or the 8th, 9th, and 10th hour of a Monday? So actually our view is that there's no real evidence that moving to 4 10-hour days is going to do anything good for your productivity.
Got you. Another thing that just came to my mind as well, especially while you're discussing, you know, the U.S. and Japan as being very overworked countries. One big difference, I lived in Japan for a couple of years, and I had always heard that myself. One thing I noticed is in Japan, when I worked in an office there, people took a lot of smoke breaks. And the U.S., probably from 1945 to the 1990s, taking a smoke break once an hour during work was a very natural thing, to the point where everyone would get up around the same time, go outside, have a smoke, maybe two, and then grab a coffee or whatever, go back to their desk and work. And I don't think that necessarily has been replaced by anything. Like, you typically don't see anyone saying, I'm going to go take a breathing break, go outside and take some deep breaths, or I'm going to take a vitamin D break, go outside and catch some sun. So there's this, like, there's certain types of lifestyles that were part of that 5 hour, or I'm sorry, that 8 hour, 5 day a week work phenomenon that has led to it being outdated as well, I would believe. Maybe there's a phone break someone can take, I don't know. But like, well, even then you would have to, now you can text at your desk, but if you had to call the house, you'd have to go to a phone booth and make a phone call or something. So why hasn't any of that been adapted in the natural and in the current work spot space?
What I think this gets really into is the philosophy that we have that the 4 day work week challenges the perceptions around the optics of hard work versus the drivers of real outcomes. And I think, you know, this is why there can be, again, a misconception around, some people think, you know, you're moving to a 4 day work week or you're reducing work time, that must automatically mean that anything that's kind of like, you know, rest related, anything that's like team, you know, team building, giving people the opportunity to kind of fraternize with colleagues, you know, any kind of leadership development, training opportunities, these are the first things to go. And it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, if you think about Covey's matrix, the kind of urgent, important, you know, where would a lot of that teamwork, that, you know, collaboration time, that leadership development time, it would be in that, you know, it's not urgent, but it is important. So that is not the waste we're talking about in the work week. They're actually the kinds of things that we've seen companies, while reducing work hours, also really investing in making sure that people have that time to recharge during the work day. So that, you know, when they're working, they're totally focused and they're able to be their best selves at work.
And collaborate. So you're not just, it's not just Groundhog Day. You're not just doing the same thing and tasks over and over again, but you're actually using your brain. Right, you're actually collaborating with your workmates.
There's a really, I want to just give you this stat, really interesting study from a company called Synergy Vision in the UK, who moved to a 4 day work week, that I think gets to the heart of this. They, before adopting a 4 day work week, had a survey of their employees which asked, how capable do you feel of getting all of your work done, everything that's expected of you done within your work week? And about 50% of people said, we feel we have the time to get done what we need to do. They went to a 4 day work week, reduced work time by 20%. They did the same survey at the end. 78% of people said, I feel that we've enough time in the work week to get done what we need to get done. I think that tells you something, which is that when you actually enable people to address these kind of inefficiencies, these frustrations within their work week, that might've been things that, you know, for 2 or 3 or 4 years, you've got this administrative process that, you know, everyone knows it doesn't work particularly well, but it's just the way things are. So everyone just gets on with it. When you actually provide a safe space for people to redesign how they work in order to give themselves additional time, but still deliver the same results for the company, 9 times out of 10, even more than that, they will find a way.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me of the Pareto principle, right? Like, so the 80-20 rule, like, look at 20% of the things. Well, I guess you can do it either way, but 20% of the things that you hate doing, that you don't want to do, and delegate it, and then focus on the 80. Or you can do it opposite. You can look at the 80% of the things that you hate doing and delegate that and focus on the 20. But if you look at that and you take 20% of the things that are wasteful, right? So that's basically, yeah, that's one day a week. So if you take 20% of your work week, look at everything that's wasteful, throw that away, don't replace it so you have to do more, but just focus on what you're expected to do. It just sounds like it sounds natural, right? It sounds like something that can be adopted and not abused, because I think for companies that do try to keep that 5 days, eight hours a day, like, okay, you've eliminated 20% of the wastefulness. Well, let's give you 20% more things to do on top of that.
And it's interesting you went there, because that was the point I was about to make. We do get people saying, look, you know, we agree with everything you're saying. These are our understood management principles. However, you know, we don't need to give people a day off. You know, we can just adopt these practices within our organization and improve productivity by way more than you would do if you reduce work time. It doesn't work like that. Human beings don't work like that. And part of the beauty around this is the quid pro quo. You know, it is the idea that, you know, this is, for a lot of leaders that have done this, they've described it as the cheapest, most efficient process improvement strategy that we have ever deployed. And, you know, I think that if you think that you would get that level of engagement, that level of buy-in within the organization without doing something like the 4-day work week in return, I think you're kidding yourself. And just last point on that, you know, the 5-day work week has been around for a century. It's a construct of the manufacturing and the industrial era. You know, we have seen in the last 30 or 40 years the kinds of advances in technology and the kinds of improvements in productivity that even John Maynard Keynes, when he predicted we'd all be working 15-hour work weeks by now, would never have predicted. Globalization, internet, email. And yet the standard work week is still the same. So I think there's no question. We have the productive capacity and we have the technological tools to be able to pull it off. And it's about, you know, who's brave enough to take up the challenge. And I think the question for a lot of CEOs in a huge amount of industries now is very rapidly going to be, you know, which is a bigger risk to your company? Is it that we try this and it doesn't work? Or is it that our biggest competitor does it first?
Good point. I remember the 8-hour workday, 5 days a week was part of the Industrial Revolution and part of unionizing, right? 8 hours to work, 8 hours to sleep, and 8 hours to do whatever I want to do, right? Before that, it was 10 hours, 12 hours, et cetera. So this all is a hangover from the Industrial Revolution. I think we've advanced a little bit.
The same arguments, you know, the same arguments that you would hear people say, they don't believe the 4-day work week can work. It's an unaffordable luxury. It's going to crash the economy. They were the same arguments that were made back then. And I think, you know, the 5-day week didn't happen overnight. You know, it was legislated for, but at the end of a long 30 to 40 year process, not every country did it at the same time. Not every industry did it at the same time. You had pioneers like Henry Ford. And from a business point of view, you had, as you said, you know, social movements and the labor movement campaigning for 8 hours rest, 8 hours recreation, 8 hours labor. So I feel we're at the early stages of that very similar arc with the 4-day work week. We're at the early adopter innovator phase, but because we're in the 21st century, the digital world, you know, we're coming out of a great disruptor in the pandemic, which has, I think, dislodged a lot of the cultural and societal norms like the standard work week. You know, is it possible that the trajectory for a 4-day week to happen might be a bit quicker? Could it be 10 or 15 years rather than the 30 or 40 years it took for the 5-day week to take hold? I think that's possible.
I believe so too. I'm looking forward to our pilot program in October, by the way. We are doing our summer Fridays already. So as I'm sure you know, we'll let you know how that goes. Joe, it's been a pleasure having you. When I do these shows, I like to also talk a little bit about the individual. So you're from Western Ireland. Where is that? Whereabouts, I believe?
I'm from a place called Roscommon, and so I'm pretty much live in the middle of nowhere. My partner and I moved back there during the pandemic. I hadn't lived there since before I went to college, and we had this experience of, you know, living somewhere where it was literally a 15 to 20 minute drive to the nearest shop to now living in New York City, which has been a big change. But yeah, it's in the Midwest of Ireland.
And you let me know you were a New York Mets fan even before moving to Queens, but you're also a Buffalo Bills fan. How did that happen? How did you become a Buffalo Bills fan living in Ireland?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely a rare species in being like a Buffalo Bills fanatic from the west of Ireland. I don't think we've got a huge membership community. So I was about, I'd say, 11, 12 years of age. We used to get the American football on Sky Sports. You know, at that age, I turned it on. I was like immediately captivated by it, obsessed with it. And the first year I was watching it was the year, if you're a football fan, you'll remember, Bledsoe was quarterbacking the Patriots. It was the year he got injured in the playoffs and Tom Brady took over. But they had shown the Patriots like two times or three times on TV that year. So I had kind of decided, 11-year-old me had decided that Bledsoe was my favorite player. So that summer, when obviously he left the Patriots and joined the Bills, I said, okay, that's my team now. And I've had 20 years of suffering and hardship since then. And then I moved here and, you know, we're Super Bowl contenders. So it's exciting times.
It is exciting. It is exciting. That's kind of cool to hear. So you followed Bledsoe over to the
followed Drew Bledsoe. The plot thickens. The story gets even weirder.
Oh, how so?
No, that's what I mean. You know,
I'm
from Ireland. I was like a Drew Bledsoe obsessive as a child. So yeah.
Exactly. Well, I think Buffalo's finally has its chance of championship. It's been a pleasure having you on today. Like I said, and of course, in truly transparent search engine journal style, we're going to be trying the 4-day work week. We're going to be going through this with your consultancy. We're going to be sharing how it's worked for us, just like we've been sharing things like always being a digital first company, always been being a virtual workplace, right? When everybody else went virtual during the pandemic, we've been virtual since day one. So we love sharing these things. We love sharing these things with our audiences, with different managers out there. There's a lot of people that listen to this podcast that may be wondering how to avoid burnout amongst your team, how to increase productivity, how to increase overall happiness amongst your team. Are you looking to burn people out and replace them with fresh people to burn out again? Or do you want to have longevity in the workspace and a team that's working together on common goals that actually enjoy spending time with each other? So this could be a way to make that happen, and we're going to be sharing it. We're going to be sharing our experiences with 4-Day Week Global. So, Joe, thank you so much for jumping on today. Really appreciate it. I've shared your Twitter handle along with the website. For those of you who are listening, you can go to 4dayweek.com, or you can follow 4-Day Global or 4-Day Week Global on Twitter at 4dayweek_global. Again, Joe, it's been a pleasure. Anything else you'd like to add before we sign off for the day?
Other than to say, you can contact us directly on program, that's program at 4dayweek.com. If you're interested in hearing more about the pilot program, we're going to be running it here in the US. Love to talk to you and find out if you've got any questions or if you're interested in taking part.
Cheers. Well, thank you so much. Thank you again to InMotion Hosting for sponsoring today's SEJ show. InMotion Hosting and our sponsors make this possible. And I hope all of you enjoy the rest of your 5, 4, or maybe 3-day week. Have a good one.